From the land to Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of August, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com. I'll bring you up to speed on the agricultural news for the day. We'll hear from Jackie Fatka with CoBank about the SREs. Those are the small refinery exemptions, and how she and CoBank are viewing what the EPA might do going forward. And then we'll turn our attention to the NLRS, the Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy, and nitrogen rate applications and timings. This is less about the NLRS and a whole lot more about the economics of the MRTN. That's the maximum return to nitrogen, the in-rate calculator you can find online. Gary Schnitke will be here for that. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day, too, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn futures for the day settled at $4.02, a nickel lower. The March down 4 3/4 at $4.20. November beans at $9.90 3/4, 3 3/4 lower. January 10.09 1/4 down 3 3/4 cents as well. And wheat futures in the soft red 8.5 lower. Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com now joins us from West Bend, Wisconsin. Hi, Naomi. I hope you're having a great day.
Yeah, nice day here today in Wisconsin.
It's a good thing it's a nice day, because when I opened up a bar chart to look at the numbers and saw corn was down a nickel, sometimes I don't get that until we get to this closing market report. That hurt, just because it's another contract close and in that $4 range for December corn. What can you tell me about the losses today and why it happened?
Yeah, so just another day of losses as the weekly crop progress ratings continue to look great. 73% of the corn is good to excellent, same as last week. But I think what really killed the market today, StoneX came out with their next updated yield guesstimate of 188.1, which was just more negative news for the market to absorb. Now, keep in mind, next week on Tuesday is the next USDA WASDE report, and it'll be yield guesses based on satellite imagery and farmer surveys. So we will likely see them show a bigger number out there. And when you look back at the past 10 years, six out of the last 10 years, the USDA WASDE yield number has increased from July to August. And when it increases, the average increase was 3.73 bushels from 1 month to the next. So ideas of a big crop, just ho-hum demand news, waiting for more trade deals, just the lack of bullish news continues to weigh on the market. We'll see if $4 holds for the DEIS contract or not.
Well, we'll watch to see if that holds. Do you think it can?
No, I'll be honest, I don't. I would say that the market probably holds $4 support for a few days here. We trade in maybe a 5 or 6 cent sideways pattern. But if $4 fails, then I think that the technical mindset points to 485, which would be a match of the December low last year in August at the 385 number. So I think that that is possible if $4 fails, and then that might take us into the end of August, and hopefully we see our harvest low at that time.
Well, but it would be good if it would come before harvest. I think producers would feel good about that. On some kind of rebound, is there historical precedence for how much happens during the September-October timeframe? Do you know?
Yeah, so it's a lot of times that harvest low is the last couple weeks of August to the first week of September. And it, when you just eyeball charts, December corn charts back over the past 10 years, take out 2021 and 2022, just because those were different years of lower production. But in general, usually if you can see a harvest recovery, it's been maybe 20 to 30 cents, but then it kind of stalls out and prices have a tendency to trade sideways. Last year, we had an initial recovery bounce and then a little bit of a pullback, and ultimately, of course, that market chugged higher all the way into February. But just the initial get up and go is slow going, because we have to get that harvested crop into bins or into town, And we might actually see some big piles out there this fall, depending on where things come in when all is said and done at harvest time with this big crop.
So if you think about that as the 410, 415 area, producers who have to market across the scale, is that what you want them to wait for?
Well, it's going to be a little bit of a different bag this year. You know, what worked last year isn't necessarily going to work this coming year. I would say if you are in a position where you know you're going to be selling grain across the scale at harvest, start to look at a re-ownership strategy, maybe out to May with a bull call spread or something like that with fixed risk in case China all of a sudden comes in and buys a large amount. Or if South America has any bad weather come December, January, February, that's something that could let the market rally later on. So, you know, the reality is that right now perception is that it's a large U.S. crop and that's just going to weigh on things for a while. But low prices ultimately, as you know, cure low prices. So at some point, the market should have a rebound.
What are you watching in the soybean?
Yeah, so with soybean markets, you know, USDA report next week probably has either just a slight increase on yield, just because the weather, of course, has been good. But I don't think we'll see anything big there. What we're going to be continuing to watch is if the USDA makes any further demand revisions regarding soybean exports. That's where all the questions are at, and China still hasn't really shown up yet. When I read the newswire, President Trump says, oh, we're talking to China and everything's going to be hunky-dory, but August 12th is their deadline for the next trade tariff negotiations, and so do we just get to August 12th and actually have something on the table for a deal? And for the market to get excited, we need to have not just a deal, but we need to say China's going to come in and buy, you know, X amount of soybeans to get the market excited. If President Trump comes in and just pushes the can down the road and gives them an extension, beans are going to have a rough go of it for a while, especially on the perception that it's going to be a big crop.
It'll be interesting to see how they do it and whether the trade agreement will include some purchase agreement of some sort. It would also be interesting to see when that purchase agreement might be put into place, whether it would be for this fall and new crop or if they're looking further out. So lots of things to look at as it's related to the marketplace. Any final word from you before I let you go?
Just of course, that cattle market continues to be on fire. So another push higher today. Cash values continue to be strong. But in general, stay defensive with the grain markets, and when we see signs of any type of a harvest low in the latter part of August, we will be sounding the alarms and letting everybody know.
Thank you much. We appreciate it. That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. In today's agricultural news, several small refinery exemptions wait for a ruling from the Environmental Protection Agency, and the U.S. renewable fuels industry is watching to see what the agency will do. Jackie Fatka, lead economist for farm supply and biofuels at CoBank, talks about where the situation is right now.
We are waiting to see what EPA will do with some of these small refinery exemptions. And the question is, do they eliminate it or do they require additional larger facilities to absorb some of those smaller refinery exemptions? Looking back in previous years when the Trump administration did approve some of these SREs in 2017, it did create a little bit of shift. The market is waiting to see what's going to happen and how this might impact demand.
Fatka says the agency is expected to make a decision on the SREs before November 1.
We do know that EPA is likely to make a decision on these SREs ahead of its final rule on the renewable volume obligation, which is supposed to go into effect by November 1st. So we'll get a little bit more clarity here. That is one of the wild cards we're waiting to see. I've been calling it an X factor on how EPA treats these historical SREs and what they do and how they allocate those potential exemptions on the overall demand for biofuels.
Jackie Fatka is with CoBank. Elsewhere in Washington, D.C. last week, the Senate has managed to pass an ag appropriations bill. The USDA bill was one of three FY26 spending bills the Senate passed in the last week, and it did so in a bipartisan fashion. Democrat Patty Murray gave the bill backhanded praise.
We fully fund the WIC program and reject Trump efforts to eliminate international food aid programs, rural housing support, and food boxes that feed hundreds of thousands of seniors.
The Senate version spends almost $4 billion less than the House's $25.5 billion, but ups WIC nutrition by 7% and fully funds NIFA, FSIS, APHIS, and ARS. Congress relied on three consecutive continuing resolutions to keep the government funded through September 30th. Lacking the full budget for this fiscal year, another will likely be needed next month. A couple of other items of note. Farm real estate prices rose year over year nationally as every state saw gains in land values, according to an annual report by the Ag Department. The value of land and buildings on farms rose 4.3% this year to $4,350. The agency said after a survey of more than 28,000 operations conducted in April and June, cropland cost increased 4.7% to an average of $5,830, pasture land at $1,920 an acre. Iowa ag land was valued at $9,790 an acre. That's up 3.9% on the annual basis. And Illinois saw gains of 2.6% to $8,930. On that note, the price of used high horsepower tractors fell about 18% and 23% from 2023 to 2024 levels, while regional auctions report used equipment values fell by as much as 40%. So far in 2025, used farm equipment values found footing and a trend on the verge of reversing due to growing strains in the farm economy. According to the Machine Repeat website, after the huge rate of drop we saw in 2024, which mirrored the big drop-off in 2014, Greg Peterson thought it would keep sliding, but says it instead has leveled off through the first half of the year. And finally today, Tyson Foods raised its full-year earnings forecast as strong U.S. chicken demand and cheap feed cost helped it withstand losses in its beef business. Operating earnings, excluding some items, are expected to range from $2.1 billion to $2.3 billion in fiscal year 2025, an increase of $100 million at the midpoint from the prior guidance range. That's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Do visit our website at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming to listen to anytime you'd like. Just click and play from the website or search it out in your favorite podcast applications. Look for the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Speaking of it, Laura Gentry and Gary Schnitke, along with myself, hosted a webinar this morning on nitrogen application timings and rates. This has to do, in part, with the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. You can pick that up on the Farm Doc Daily website to watch the full webinar later this afternoon. On YouTube, too, at youtube.com/@farmdoc, the webinar on nitrogen rate and applications and the MRTN. I did ask Gary exactly what were the key takeaways from this morning's webinar while I was there in studio with him in Mumford Hall.
Number one is to apply nitrogen at close to MRTN rates, maximum return to nitrogen rates. We have shown, and that's collaborated by obviously the MRTN itself, that that is the profit-maximizing place to be. And that's generally less than 200 pounds of actual N per acre. It will vary, but it's roughly 179 in central and northern Illinois. So being near that number is number one. Number two is having a lower cost method of applying the nitrogen. And by that, there's two things that impact that. Number one is the number of times you apply nitrogen in the field. And everybody, all farmers are generally use two or more methods. One being even fall applied nitrogen, you'll apply it in the fall. There will also likely be a DAP portion of it, but also a nitrogen in the spring with chemicals to make them adhere better. But anyway, the primary nitrogen applications down to one. So fall applied mostly pre-plant or mostly side dress is pretty key. And the more times you go across the field, we don't see a yield advantage and we're adding cost. Also in cost, anhydrous ammonia is your least cost nitrogen source. So as much as we can rely on that, that's going to reduce our cost, particularly if we don't have to use an inhibitor. So that pushes as a low cost way in mostly side dress.
It's important to remember, as you already pointed out, that the MRTN, and you can find this online by searching for in-rate calculator, and this calculator is good for every county across the whole of the Midwest. It's backed up by data from all of the land-grant universities, but important that the number that they get, the pounds of N for the crop and the value of the crop by bushels, is calculated based on all nitrogen applied, not just the nitrogen applied as anhydrous. So you have to add everything together and then start subtracting to get the primary application. Now, once they've done all of that, what else do they have to think about as it's related to these nitrogen applications? I mean, they're going to try to do one application if they can. Is there a difference between fall applied and side dressed as it relates to yield, as it relates to conservation or other areas?
Yeah, so let's just take that fall applied versus mostly side dress. We don't find a yield difference. The mostly side dress will actually have lower cost if you put on anhydrous ammonia, because generally in fall you're also putting on an inhibitor. So that will have a cost advantage. If you go to a nitrogen solution, you may have higher cost because nitrogen solutions have higher cost. But the other thing to consider is nitrate runoff, and there'll be less with side dress than mostly fall applied.
Now, right now, farmers are saying, but Gary, I might not be able to get in. There is a solution for that, at least as it's related to crop insurance, I think.
Yeah, we have a PACE crop insurance product that will protect if you can't get nitrogen on after planting. I would note that the probability of getting it on is pretty high, and we even saw that in the 2019 year. We saw most people did get nitrogen on after all that wet weather.
So do you think PACE, because you followed it fairly closely, is that a crop insurance that you think producers should take a close look at, or is it simply I have issues with it and I know that, so I should take it?
No, I would suggest taking a good hard look at PACE. And again, it will provide protection against that event, and it is subsidized, so it should be a low-cost way.
Are there differences in the economics across the state, for instance, in northern, central, high, and low land values, or southern Illinois?
As far as the general principle of keeping within MRTM and using one primary system for applying nitrogen, no. Obviously, as we go down to southern Illinois, the fall applications are much less desirable because of the nitrogen staying in the soil till the plant matures. So the general recommendations are the same. Fall becomes less desirable as we move south.
Anything else about this that we should know?
The nitrogen is our largest cost, one of our largest cost items. And by the way, it doesn't seem to be going down in price. We were looking at and nitrous ammonia prices today, and it's $800 per ton, which is pretty significant.
Yeah, significantly, those prices jumped just after the OBBBA passed. I saw that happen in the numbers that were coming from dealerships across the state of Illinois. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. And can you make $800 nitrogen pay next year on your expected crop budgets?
It's going to be a negative return year unless we get some higher prices in there. So, yep, it's continues to be a tight economic time. We either need to see costs come down, which they've been sticky, or something.
It makes it important when you check the nitrogen rate calculator, the MRTN, to see the range that is within a dollar of the maximum return. And you can turn down the dial on the number of pounds you're applying.
That's exactly right. So there is one area where we have the potential for savings.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. He, along with Laura Gentry from the Illinois Corn Growers Association, hosted a webinar this morning for the FarmDoc team about nitrogen rate applications and timings. You can find that on the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look in the archives of the events and webinars section, or you can visit youtube.com/@farmdoc. That's youtube.com/@farmdoc. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Don Day left us this note about the growing regions in the United States.
After a bout of cooler weather, we're going to see temperatures later this week, into the weekend, and next week start to warm back up again. But the cooler, drier air that has settled into the Midwest and Corn Belt region will be replaced by more humid and warmer air down the road. However, precipitation looks to be more centered into the northern plains. It looks like Minnesota, the Dakotas, Nebraska, parts of Iowa and Wisconsin are going to have the best chances of rain in the coming week ahead. Lesser rain chances, in fact, generally dry conditions, will be found across the central and eastern Corn Belt, across Indiana, Illinois, a lot of Missouri, into the Ohio Valley. Those areas in the central and eastern Corn Belt will be drier overall over the next week or so, along with those warmer temperatures. So the wetness stays in the northwest Corn Belt and the northern plains, dry in the central and eastern areas. Another area where there will be precipitation will be in the Carolinas and parts of the Mid-Atlantic, as we could see some tropical activity developing there over the next 7 to 10 days.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online, on demand at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. You have a good afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.